This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. They have beautiful book page posters that have passages from some of our favorite fantasy series like The Lord of the Rings and A Song of Ice and Fire and Harry Potter. They even have the Night's Watch vows with the Three-Eyed Crow. They also have Targaryen, Stark, and Baratheon bookmarks. You should really go check them out. It's 4Cats Boutique on Etsy and get yourself some bookmarks and amazing artwork. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. 4Cats Boutique on Etsy.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, A Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into John 8 of A Clash of Kings.
Yes, as second to last chapter. We are almost done. We are in the final stretch here, the penultimate episode of A Clash of Kings for the Bend the Knee podcast, at least on our first read through. Who knows what we'll be doing in 10 years?
Right.
Probably back in the same spot.
Probably.
And probably don't still have Winds of Winter. But that's, you know, we've talked about that quite enough for, you know, maybe the rest of this year. Well, we'll be back on it. Go ahead.
I'll just say, we might as well touch on it real quick because, literally, it's snowing outside. Like, it's a blizzard outside, right? I thought of this chapter. I was listening to it today. I thought of Winds of Winter. And I really did think to myself, it's blown right on past us. We're never going to get it, but it's okay. I'm going to hold. You know what? Matt, by God, how many members of the Night's Watch stood there their whole lives, right? A couple hundred years ago, 500 years ago, waiting for the next long night, guarding the realms of men. They never saw, right, what this current group is going to see, but they held the watch, right? They held the wall. They were there.
Yes, they did.
Okay? That's us right now.
Hold the gate.
Yeah. Hold
again. You know, we always go to hold the door, but hey, those guys held the gate.
They did. And that's what we're doing. And we're going to have to do it even though we have no idea this is what it feels like, right? You're holding the gate, not knowing when the book's coming, when the reinforcements are coming, when will it end? You just have to hold it and hold on for dear life. Okay.
Yes. Yes, you do. Absolutely. Awesome. As you know, here we are, man. Tail stretch of A Clash of Kings, man. I mean, what are some of your, you have any favorite moments of A Clash of Kings?
Oh gosh. I don't know, man. I'm trying to think back through all this. It's kind of I think some of the stuff just with man, I don't know. I like Rob, you know, I've always liked Rob, which is why it's gonna make, you know,
is the next book a little harder?
Like, you're really behind the young wolf. You're behind the idea that he captures Jaime Lannister and he's winning these fights. And so that's an awesome thing. I don't see how he could lose here. He's outmaneuvering Tywin, and there's all this Tywin has all this renown. There's all this history. He's tied back to the you know, battle at King's Landing and so on. So for me, we're rooting for the Starks. And then we see him starting. We start to hear some rumors and just a little bit here and there that we're making some mistakes, some pretty big blunders. And it's just like, you've got this. It's almost like you're at the foul line, right? And you, like, all you got to do is make one out of two shots. You got two shots, got to make one, and he misses them both. And then they still have to make like a three to win it, but they do. Like, it's just like, how could you botch this? And I just feel, and we know that's where it's going. And so to me, it's, when I first read it, I was just like, Rob's got this. Rob's the man. He's the young wolf. He's this king, and his brother's up there doing his thing on the realm. They're going to get ready for some magical, you know, battle or whatever. And no, sure enough, that's just not the way this is going to go.
Yeah, for me, I would have to say, man, I really like those Battle of the Blackwater chapters. I just really like the way it sort of goes back and forth. And you're like, man, it sounds like it's going to go bad. And the next thing you know, this isn't as bad as we thought. And so It's kind of, yeah, definitely kind of interesting. I think those Battle of the Blackwater chapters I really like. And then we get Davos and Theon chapters in this book.
Right.
Which is definitely sort of yeah. a change because we didn't have them. And this is really, you know, in the next book, we'll start out with a Jaime chapter. But here we are with a Theon chapter, who Theon seems kind of like a good guy. All right. Mm-hmm. So we kind of slip a little bit into sort of villain territory here with our first sort of, I guess, if you want to say villain, anti-hero, however you want to phrase it. Character chapters, which we know we're going to get more so of in the next chapter, but then it begins to sort of paint them in more of a gray light, not necessarily black or white, and that's sort of the case with Jaime, as we'll come up here to in our first Storm of Swords chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's cool. That's what George does, right? He's taking us. He's you know, we get latched onto one character, even if that character is a good character, like I was mentioning with Rob, and you start to get behind him, whether he's going to shift him to, you know, as he's black or white or whatever, good or bad. It's really more that we got behind him and now we're going to see his downfall. Yeah. So I don't know, man, that's why this is an emotional series. This, the Song of Ice and Fire it's captivating, but it's also, it's heart wrenching. And we just need a conclusion, you know, we need a conclusion mm-hmm. to it. By God, it's too much.
Well, hey, maybe, you know, we will get there one day. So, okay. So before we dive into today's chapter, we'll just say as that we were invited on a podcast. So that's going to be next Sunday, November 21st, I believe 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I know it's so 5:30 p.m. Pacific, and then whatever time zone. I know we have listeners from all over the world, which again mm-hmm. is crazy. Just to say out loud, yeah. But I know we do. So the whatever time zone you happen to be in for that, but we will be going on to Gray Areas podcast or her
Direwolf
YouTube,
City,
Direwolf City. Yeah, her YouTube. She also has it as a podcast as well. So going to be going on there. We had her on the show a little bit ago. Obviously, super looking forward to that. They run a great show over there, and we're going to be talking House of the Dragon. And we're going to be talking like what's going on with some of the houses in House of the Dragon. So definitely looking forward to that. It's going to be super, super cool.
Yeah, I'm pumped for it. I think she's awesome. Makes good content. And it'll be kind of cool. Boy, I've got to dust off the old, you know, Fire and Blood and World of Ice and mm-hmm. Fire. Get back into some of the histories. And
wow,
we got a great video for that, don't we?
We do. I just made a video about that. Well, not just made. It was like a month or two ago. I made a video on that, just a brief little rundown. It's about 10 minutes, just kind of what's going on with some of the houses, especially some of the bigger houses that we know more of in A Song of Ice and Fire, the main series, Game of Thrones, right? Like what's going on with House Tully and House Stark and all that stuff. And the show is probably going to be different. I have to imagine that, you know, House Stark isn't really all that sort of involved mm-hmm. until the end, but I would have to imagine they might change that in the show.
Yeah, just because of, yeah, just fans,
marketing,
right?
Right, yeah. I mean,
just wanting some Starks in there, even if they just send them down to maybe there's a young Stark who's at court or something, was sent down. Yeah,
so be cool. Yeah, awesome. Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and we're just gonna go ahead and dive right into the reread here. So today we are into John 8 of A Clash of Kings, last John chapter of this book, and the second to last chapter of A Clash of Kings. So the weather in the Skirling Pass had gotten worse. Corrin had sent Eben back with the last Garen to reach the Lord Commander with all haste while they rest, while the rest try to head off pursuit. Watched by the Eagle, Corrin then sends Stone Stake back as well to take the high pass to reach the Fist of the First Men. Corrin commands Stone Stake to tell Mormont all that John saw, that he faces giants and wargs and worse, and that the trees have eyes again. That night, the Half-Hand asks John if his sword is sharp and makes the young man recite his oath with him. Corrin then commands John to yield when they are overtaken, and not to balk no matter what the wildlings ask him to do to prove himself. John is appalled at the suggestion, but Corrin tells him to go among the wildlings and learn what they plan, watch what they do, but remember who he is and return to Mormont when he has learned what the wildlings are searching for. Corran promises to tell the Lord Commander that Jon never broke his oath when he sees him again. They are then overtaken soon after by Rattleshirt and a party of wildlings. Ygritte is among them. They have Eben's head, and Rattleshirt orders them killed. Jon yields, as Corran orders him to do, and the Half-Hand says in contempt, I was warned, bastard blood is craven. Rattleshirt commands Jon to kill Corran to prove himself. Jon slays the Big Ranger only after Ghost gives him an opening by biting the man's calf. The wildlings accept him despite Rattleshirt's misgivings, and Ygritte tells him that the eagle was once the man he killed up in the passes when they captured her. So, actually, a lot to unpack in today's chapter. Certainly, a lot of sort of theories and everything else that you can go on of. So, starting off here, when Corran Halfhand told him to find some brush for a fire, Jon knew their end was near. It would be good to feel warm again, if only for a little while. He told himself when he hacked bare branches from the trunk of a dead tree. Ghost sat on his haunches, watching silent as ever. Will he howl for me when I'm dead, as Bran's wolf howled when he fell, Jon wondered. Will Shaggy Dog howl far off in Winterfell and Grey Wind and Nymeria, wherever they might be?
Yeah. Will they? Do they? Right? I mean, there's something that we know right at the end of where we left Jon at the very end of this whole thing. Yeah. The answer is yes, Jon. When you die, when you're stabbed for the watch, they will howl. As you move on down here, Matt, there's something I wanted to ask you about. Corran came and he stood over the fire that's being made here. The flames, they rose, they're flickering and so on. And he says, mm-hmm. as shy as a maid on her wedding night, the Big Ranger said in a soft voice and near as fair. Sometimes a man forgets how pretty a fire can be. And he starts to think, you know, was Corran a man who would speak of maids and wedding nights? You know, he had spent his whole life in the watch. Most men don't, Matt. Most men don't spend their whole life in the watch. It's like they come halfway through. So I think there's something fishy with that, the whole idea. Like, he would be one of few who was, like, what, born there, raised there, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, how does that work? Anyway, did he ever love a maid or have a wedding? Why ask that question, right? Did he ever love a maid or have a wedding? So there's something. There's a backstory here to Corran, and it just leads us all to kind of believe that they're like he's an interesting fella who lost half of his right hand in some combat. We like to speculate it's Alan Reed saving Eddard Stark, and that this would be Sir Arthur Dayne. But we do know that Stone Snake is still out there and could tell us more later. We'll get to all that here in a bit. But I mean, that's like when you look at this. Why spend your whole life at the watch? Was he born into it? Was he, right? Or is that a misconception that Jon has? Or is
You know who else? You know who else is theoretically born into the watch is Mance Rayder.
Right. All these guys, it's interesting. You know, while I'm thinking about these connections here, real quick, let me just go rapid fire on you folks for this, because at one point in this chapter, Matt, let's just go over the Targaryen connections, okay? Because this is insane. Like, there are so many. Squire Dolbich, right? He is a squire to a former Targaryen, right? He's very close, takes commands from Corran Halfhand here. Corran has this silver gray hair, right? He's just so old, right? but he comes with Dawn.
As tall as a spear.
As tall as a spear. God. You know, there's the idea that he's been here at the watch the whole time to cover up some possible backstory. There was when Squire Dolbridge is, his head is held up. He's as bald. He's an old bald man, and they hold up his head and he says it looks like an egg. Looks like an egg. Reminds me of just, you know, connections to, you think of George's mind, right? Like, if you're trying to make these little connections to Targaryens, okay, well, he's the squire for one. His head looks like an egg. when Corin is slashed in the throat by John's sharp sword, which could be Blackfyre, right? All the theories there. He had a pearl of rubies, a glamour, right? A pearl of red blossoming, like little rubies around his neck as if it were, he was bleeding out. And, you know, why describe him that way? Just interesting. So there's more. There's more. Right. But I mean,
well, it just remember, because I always like to point this out. Remember that the first Dunkin' Egg story, right, is posted, released the same year as Clash of Kings.
Wow.
Remember that. Just remember that, right?
Remember that. It's in his mind, right? He's thinking, right. Yeah. He's setting up this backstory. So, gosh, man. I still can't get over to just the orders that are given to Eben, Stone Snake, and these guys, and the way they obey Corin is so interesting. Telling Mormont what they saw, the old powers are waking, the faces, you know, the giants, the wargs, and worse, the trees have eyes again. These guys are believers in old powers, and there's someone named Bloodraven who went to the Watch, has disappeared, and is you know, ordaining things from his cave.
Yeah. You know, pour one out for Squire Dalbridge, by the way.
He's a boss. He's a boss, right? And he's blowing that horn like it for a moment they thought perhaps. Let me just see here. At first John had nursed the hope that Squire Dalbridge would keep the wildlings bottled up in the pass. It was the last John chapter, I think, where it was Squire Dalbridge who basically, like, I can't remember if it was Corin or Squire Dalbridge who said it, but that one man could hold so many wildlings in this one spot. And Squire right. Dalbridge is just like, yeah, I mean, without question, gotcha. I got it. I mean, like, without question, I will die here. I will lay down my life. They say later on that I forget who it is that we're going to send someone on horseback to ride on ahead. And John wants to know why that's not him. He's one of the fastest riders. Why not him? He could get back to the Fist of the First Man quickly. No, you have another part to play. Your story goes. I think it even says his story like goes in a different direction. So it's just like, and that's Corin telling him that, no, we have plans for you. Now, is that just to get him close to Mance? Is that because he thought the best chance here was for him to go in and be a spy? Or did he really not think he could get back to the Fist of the First Man in time? So he's saving his life in that regard. A lot to think about there with Corin's decision and not sending John back. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting again. Here with Squire Dalbridge, right? I mean, let me just go over this guy, right? So just from his wiki page here, Dalbridge, called Squire Dalbridge, is a veteran ranger of the Night's Watch stationed at the Shadow Tower. He's an older man regarded as a great archer. He is nicknamed Squire Dalbridge because in the spirit of his youth, he squired for King Jaehaerys II Targaryen. He is said to have the keenest eyes in the Night's Watch. And then he's one of the 100 men reinforcements from the Shadow Tower to arrive at the Fist of the First Men. And then, yeah, he is chosen by Corin Halfhand along Eben, Stone Snake, and Jon Snow to go with him. So, yeah, he's specifically chosen. And King Jaehaerys II, right, he is 259 to 262. And then he is preceded, he is in between Aegon the Fifth, Egg, and Aerys the Second. So he was his squire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a pretty big deal, man.
Right. And so we don't know exactly when he goes to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But my guess would have to be that he maybe went. Would you say he went after, like, did he fight in Robert's Rebellion and he went to the wall sort of as like a, you know, it seems like that's obviously, that might be why Alistair Thorne went. Maybe they went right together, perhaps even. Because it seems like, I'm sure there were some Targaryen sort of loyalists at that time that obviously went to the wall. We sort of know that with Alistair Thorne. But I don't know that we know that Alistair Thorne was forced into going to the wall. That's not specifically said. We just know he fought in Robert's Rebellion on the other side. So perhaps Dalbridge was the same. But given the timetable, I almost think if he's if they know him as Squire Dalbridge, I would have to imagine that he would have moved up the ranks. I mean, if you're squire for a king and then you continue to serve, you know, for the Targaryens, he should have moved up, would have been a knight at least, or perhaps a lord of some small castle at some point. So the other option would potentially be maybe Summerhall. Maybe he accompanied a Sir Duncan the Tall. Perhaps if he goes north to the wall after Summerhall.
Good. Yeah. I mean,
there's really not a lot about Dalbridge. All we know is that in the spirit of his youth, he squired for King Jaehaerys II. So, you know, that would maybe be my guess.
Interesting. So he's born in 254, right? Okay. Wow. First of all, he's mentioned in the appendix of looks like every book. Which is interesting. Why I do that? Cool to think about who he could be. Jaehaerys the second Targaryen.
Right. So Jaehaerys is the in-between of Egg and the Mad King.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of a sickly, pale, frail guy. He wears Kingmaker's crown. Which is like that big, almost like golden bronzy one, because Maker creates his own.
Right.
Crown. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so okay, what's interesting is that, okay, if Jaehaerys the second, so that would be, he's king after? Is he king after Summerhall then? Does that sound right?
Yes, because remember, Rhaegar's born at Summerhall, but let me look this up.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, it's interesting that different waves of Targaryens go to the wall. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Or Targaryen loyalists or supporters. 259 is when it is destroyed, when it happens. And then, so, his reign was 259.
After, his egg dies. Yeah. Egg dies at Summerhall.
So then Dalbridge is his squire, right there in his.
Right. He could be his squire before he became king.
Yeah.
So then the question should be raised. Don't you think that if you're squire to a king, I mean, I guess it's his squire, so it's a little different. It's not like Dunk. Like, Egg is Dunk's squire. It's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
But when he becomes king, don't you think, obviously, if he's close with this guy, he's going to name him a knight and even perhaps put him on his Kingsguard?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the scenario in which, I mean, that to me seems like that would be a pretty logical scenario. So why, how does this guy end up at the only thing I can think of is, again, he
stuck around.
He continues to serve the Targaryens and then ultimately is sent to the wall or goes to the, he's either sent to the wall following Robert's Rebellion or he just chooses to go at some point, to me seems, if you're living in King's Landing, why would you choose to go to the wall?
Right.
Because everybody we see that's in King's Landing now, nobody seems like they want to leave King's Landing. That has any sort of power or influence wants to just, you know, I'm going to go to the wall. So I almost would have to say he was sent there.
Wow. Yeah. I'm with you. Okay. Here's something.
Yeah, because Jahari's reign itself is pretty short because he's kind of a sickly guy. So, you know, he takes it. Yeah, it just says Dalbridge, who would later join the Night's Watch, served as a squire to Jahari's the second in his youth, which, you know, comes from the World of Ice and Fire and a Theon V chapter in a Clash of Kings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so okay, of the three people who are with Corrin Halfhand, and I'm making a real stretch here on Eben, but Eben is an interrogator. He's the one who can he's good at interrogations. Might have learned that possibly at court or something. He's very good at people getting them to give up their secrets. He's also the one who's described, his head is described as such of an egg, right? It looks like an egg. They're holding it up by the ear. And when they show it to John, it's an egg.
Right.
Dalbridge is a squire to a Targaryen. And then Stone Snake, again, in that title alone, seemingly there could be some connections made to dragons and stones and dragons looking like a snake of some kind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up him too. Because these, again, are all the companions of Corrin. Yeah. Just interesting that, and then they, you know, seemingly all want to protect John. And it's actually Eben who says that he wants him to go. Voices, send John, Eben had urged. He can ride as fast as me. John has a different part to play. He is half a boy still. So again, Eben's making the case like we should send him on. No, said Corrin, he is a man of the Night's Watch. And then again, we know that Corrin has his reasons to keep him. Now, Eben does get killed later. I mean, maybe he knows that Rattleshirt and those guys, like, no one can ride fast enough to kind of get to the Fist of the First Men. Ygritte says at the end of this chapter, like with sad kind of eyes, that, hey, we've already moved well up to the wall, right? Like, we're already in position. And we moved much faster than you realized. So
yeah. Yeah. So I guess to kind of close up here on Squire Dalbridge, just from everything I could see, the only other scenario I can see is you would not, it seems like that the way it's sort of worded is that he squired for King Jaehaerys in his youth, which judging by his age, I would have to say is probably actually, I don't know. Jaehaerys would have to be like in his 20s or so, because he's pretty frail and weak. And then when he becomes king, he's not going to have a squire. So I think the likely scenario is, considering if he didn't obviously get promoted to Lord or any of that stuff, he either for some reason decides to go to the wall once Jaehaerys becomes king, or two, I would have to say he fought in Robert's Rebellion and goes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
but again, the whole sort of thing is that it ultimately adds and builds upon all of these sort of oddities going on at the wall, and it just adds more weight to, I would say, a lot of the theories that, you know, potentially someone, you know, someone is someone else at the wall. Is ultimately what it goes. And speaking of that, by the way, the other day I was actually considering putting down a list of every scenario in which someone is actually someone else, like where it's actually confirmed. Because I know so often we get on this, like, well, it's all secret identities. And then we say, well, it can't all be secret identities. But there's already actually a lot of secret identities that are either, one, 100% confirmed. Then there's like a ton that are also like sort of your 99% level concern. Confirmed. I mean, there's like Ramsay Bolton as Reek, right? That's a confirmed secret identity, even for a little, you know, a little while. You have that. You have Maynard Plum, you know, the glamour there as Blood Raven and the Duncan Eggs things. You know, there you go. That one's not even technically 100% confirmed, but it's like a 99.999, you know, repeating percent confirmed. I mean, there's a ton more outside of that.
Yeah, for sure. So it's not really as much tinfoil as people think, I guess, to kind of consider who are these folks and why. It's interesting that it says they came to the wall and their boyhood.
Even stuff that's not even necessarily secret, but it just sort of gets revealed. There's a lot of times in which somebody gets revealed to be more like even Maester Aemon is, you go there, you think he's just this old guy. And then it's revealed, oh, hey, he's actually a Targaryen, which, right. Okay, now it's like a huge deal. And he's this really old guy and he's seen a lot. And it's sort of, you know, you get that reveal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I wonder if someone has done a kind of a count up of all of those, you know, reveals like that, because it's probably, you know, a lot, right?
So anytime something seems odd or fishy, there is an incredible likelihood that it could be true.
Yeah.
So it's just saying there is certainly validity and reason to consider a lot of these secret scenarios of anybody potentially being anybody.
Yeah. So okay, like so you brought up Squire Dalbridge. I mean, the one that's, I think, most interesting is Stone Snake, and whether or not he is still in the Skirling Pass or whether he made it out. He's mentioned again in A Storm of Swords, right? When Mance Rayder is asking Rattleshirt for a scouting report, he confirms that three or four of his Rangers, three of the four Rangers in John's squad are dead. The fourth climbed up a mountain and he was out of reach, and he was in terrain that was too rough for them to follow. So John, again, later in the same book, thinks of him again later as they're climbing the wall. So, you know, as a writer, it's you know, why have him do that? I mean, again, why have the characters think back on another character who's still out running loose? And as I told you years ago, there's so many loose threads like that I don't know if it's even going to matter. Is he just dead? Is Benjen Stark out there somewhere? I mean, it's just all these things that are still running in different directions away that they don't see. I don't see a way in which they come back and kind of we tie the knot, if you will. There just seem to be loose threads. So Stone Snake, sorry, it's hard to say, he's out there, supposedly, or he's dead in the mountain pass.
Yeah. You know, I think there's also something to be said. You know, we look at, I mean, Squire Dalbridge, obviously, you know, he's considered to have the keenest eyes and seems like he's pretty well skilled. Obviously, Corrin Halfhand is incredibly skilled because everyone's sort of scared of him, or at least knows of him. Even Stone Snake, right? I mean, a lot of the fan art and the way people talk about him, again, he seems like somebody who's pretty incredibly skilled. And I think it sort of speaks also to any time that you also have someone who is almost who seems pretty skilled at the wall is either there's something about them that would cause them to be that skilled, because we look at, you know, look at the cast and crew that Jon Snow comes up with. I mean, none of those guys seem like they know how to fight whatsoever. So obviously Jon does, because he's trained, you know, he's been training and he's had access to Castleforge steel and all of these things. We're supposed to believe that these are just like, you know, muggers and rapers and criminals and thieves, right? And so that these people end up coming to the wall. Now certainly they could be sort of tough and things like that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they would be that skilled of a fighter. They're not training with knights very often and things of that nature.
Right, and when Rattleshirt, when he sees Corrin, I don't think they really want to just feather him with arrows. They don't want to go up there and fight him, because they'll kill him. He's that good. He just had that sort of, he was revered in that way by the Night's Watch, and it seemingly through Rattleshirt is revered by the Wildlings to some degree, even though they're not going to admit that, but by their actions, they seem like, you know. I mean, also, why would you? Why risk it when you can just shoot him down? That's just what they're thinking. But
yeah, I mean, if any man in the Night's Watch can make it through the Frostfangs alone and afoot, it's you, brother. That's not Stone Snake speaking to Corrin Halfhand. That's Corrin Halfhand speaking to Stone Snake.
Yeah, I know. Again, it is through Corrin that he is. These are his four three closest individuals who like he trusts, and they also all seem to be kind of looking out for John. You don't hear anybody saying like, no one complains No one balks at any order that's given by him. They just follow their orders and they do what they're supposed to do. So also John says of Stone Snake that he has the keenest night eyes, right? So you have the keenest eyes in Squire Dalbridge, and then you have the keenest night eyes in Stone Snake. So yeah, something going on there.
Right. He's also roughly, they say he's probably near 50 with his age. But again, I think that that causes obviously some sort of, you know, perhaps, you know, could be off by a little bit, but certainly, that means he would have been roughly, he would have been around 33 years old during Robert's Rebellion, which ample fighting age, just again, to sort of throw that, just to give a number to that.
Right. Right.
Because we have no idea. We have no idea how or why he came or any of his background. But as we say, he, Corrin Halfhand chooses him. Could just, you know, even if you go down theories in which somebody is somebody else, like Corrin's Arthur Dayne or any of that stuff, you could just get to the wall and say, hey, this guy's really skilled. I want him. But perhaps also,
yeah,
he would be roughly around the same age as Corrin, you would have to believe.
Yeah. So something else to kind of remember, if John is royalty and he is next up, right? People, I mean, that royal blood and heir to the throne, those are people you die for. People believe in that and they understand. So Benjen telling these guys about it, them making a whole plan, it makes sense. Like, you would go to such great lengths to kind of conceal some of that and just to get out of there alive, because Robert has won. He wins. Why doesn't Eddard just say, hey, I'm sorry, this is my sister's child. Like, sorry, you can't have him. You can't kill him. Whatever. He's a threat. He becomes a threat, a political threat to Robert, and everyone keeps it secret. And it's from the beginning of the story in Game of Thrones, it's like Targaryens are being mentioned and secret banners are still hidden away for people who might be loyalists to them.
Right. Hold on. So the only one maybe here, so this could, in two ways sort of could throw a wrench into some things. So here you go. So the other guy here that we haven't talked about is Eben, right? Eben's a squat, heavily muscled, bald man. He served the Night's Watch since boyhood. Another guy who's just sort of grown up at the wall, right? He's regarded by Corrin Halfhand as the ranger to go to when he needs a wildling interrogated or killed. Evan's part of the, again, 100 things. He questions survivors and learns that wildlings have gathered in the Frostfangs, though his interrogation is too harsh and the prisoner dies. He's later chosen by Corrin, again, with that group. After the death of Squire Dalbridge, Evan is sent with the remaining horses to ride as fast as he can to Lord Commander. He is killed by a wildling scouting party commanded by Rattleshirt. His head is kept as a prize. And one of the Spearwives notes that he died bravely. So Eben, this is Eben to Squire Dalbridge. Man and boy, I've served the watch and ranged as far as any. I've seen the bones of giants and heard many a queer tale, but no more. I want to see them with my own eyes. Said Eben can make any man give up his secrets. Now, Eben here says we should send John to go get Mormont. Send John, Eben had urged. He can ride as fast as me. John has a different part to play. He is half a boy still. No, said Corrin. He is a man of the Night's Watch. So Corrin says, nope, can't send John.
Yeah.
And keeps him out of danger that perhaps Corrin knows when he sends Eben, he might be sending him to his death.
Right.
I can't send John on that.
Right, exactly. So he's thinking of a way in which he can, keep John alive. So is that just because John is a boy, or is that because John is more important? If he's just a man of the Night's Watch, then...
Or John's more believable to be, could just be as simple as if we do get captured and I need John to play the part that he ultimately ends up playing, it's more believable for it to be John who's newer to the wall. Mm-hmm. Than perhaps somebody who's older.
Yeah, and Corrin does know that he had the thing with Ygritte and possibly there's some sympathy there. And yeah, it's interesting when you get to that part when they actually, when he says, remember the oath that you made to me, he commanded it of him that he do whatever they ask and that he turn kind of turn cloak, right? And he to betray the Night's Watch. And he does that because they need a spy. Keep an eye out. Keep a watch. What are they digging for? That was mentioned. What were they digging for? They were opening up old graves and things like that. We've already found the horn they were looking for. It was given to them. Ghost finds it, right? Sam has it. I mean, mm-hmm. There's the whole connection to Horn Hill, right? I mean, that to me is like solid. That is a done deal. They couldn't find it, but someone in the Night's Watch did, wrapped in dragging glass and so on. That was pretty cool. So what is it that they're digging up? I think Corin doesn't know quite yet and wants to know, like, you know, keep an eye out. You'll know it when you see it or what have you. So you think there's more information to gain. So maybe there is no, you know, Targaryen secret, you know, plot here to protect Jon or whatever, and he's just mixed in all of this.
Could
but,
be.
But, you know, and really he just wants him to, he says he's got the best chance to be someone who would turn over. Like, they're all seasoned men who had been there since their youth, right? So if they've been in the watch that long and they haven't turned over or went over with Mance Rayder, then it's not likely that they'll be believed. So that could be why he tells Jon to do that too. Just another option.
Yeah. So here we go. They were scaling a low ridge between two snow-capped peaks when a shadow cat came snarling from its lair, not 10 yards away. The beast was gaunt and half-starved, but the sight of it sent Stone Snake's mare, into a panic. She reared and ran, and before the ranger could get back to her, keep her back under control, she'd stumbled off the steep slope and broken a leg. Ghost ate well that day, and Corrin insisted that the rangers mix some of the Garen's blood with their oats to give them strength. The taste of that foul porridge almost choked Jon, but he forced it down. They each cut a dozen strips of raw, stringy meat from the carcass to chew on as they rode, and left the rest for the Shadow Cats. So I just kind of find that interesting. I mean, is Corrin doing blood magic here?
Absolutely.
We see Daenerys eat a horse's heart. I mean, what are we doing here? You have to eat it. It'll make you strong. Right. Well, that's what they told Dany. And then dragons hatch. So who knows?
Yeah, the old power, the blood magic it can do wonders. That is something I think George in a panel at one point said, like, look for that common thread among the magics and see if you can find it. And I think a lot of it comes down to blood and life energy.
Right. It could just be, hey, we need more nourishment. We're out here, drink the blood because it's got nutrients in it. I mean, but could also be blood magic. So just take that for a grain of salt, right?
Yeah.
Right. So then we get to the part where he sort of says that thing. Jon thinks Stone Snake has no chance. He has no chance, Jon thought, when he watched Stone Snake vanish over a snow-covered ridge, a tiny black bug crawling across a rippling expanse of white. Then sort of continue on. You know, he's sort of thinking about Corrin. Corrin's long gray braid swung slowly with the motion of his horse. Often they would ride for hours without a word spoken. The only sounds of the soft scrape on the horseshoes and the stone and the keening of the wind, which blew endlessly through the heights. When he slept, he did not dream, not of wolves, nor his brothers, nor anything. Even dreams cannot live up here, he told himself. Then he asked him, is your sword sharp? He says, my sword is Valyrian steel. Then he asked him, do you remember the words of your vow? Say them with me, Jon Snow.
Yeah.
You know, then he does. Night gathers, now my watch begins. It shall not end until my death. I shall take no wife, hold no lands, father no children. I shall wear no crowns and win no glory. I shall live and die at my post. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher of the walls. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, the shield that guards the realms of men. I pledge my life and honor to the Night's Watch for this night and all of the nights to come. When they were done, there was no sound but the faint crackle of the flames and a distant sigh of the wind. Jon opened and closed his burnt fingers, holding tight. And then, you know, they realize that, hey, their mounts aren't going to last any longer. The flames were burning low. The fire will go out soon, Corrin said, but if the wall should ever fail, all of the fires will go out. Now, see, that's kind of interesting. Doesn't necessarily say, oh, it's going to the wildlings. It's just all the fires will go out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I think he knows that there's more. And that's, I think, the misconception maybe that Corin, some of them have, or even Mormont, is that that the wildlings are going to try to take the wall down, right? I think that's something's gotten lost in over the years in the translation, is that if the wildlings get through, or that they would, you know, breach the wall or something, that it's going to be a problem for the realm. It's not the wildlings, right? Like the ancient, you know, right. The reason it was built was the Long Night, something coming behind them, and that's what John will learn ultimately, right? So right.
No, I don't think I actually don't think an army of wildlings would do very much. You know, when we hear Jorah talk about you know, when we hear like them talk about like the Dothraki, right? Mm-hmm. And Jorah talks about how well a Dothraki would not be able to cut through plate armor. You know, but it's sort of, if you don't have that, and then Robert sort of thinks that they would be unstoppable, even though they don't have siege towers and stuff like that. I think it's more so because of that Dany would be coming with them, right? It's the fact that it's a Targaryen with this Dothraki army. But I don't know that a Dothraki army could really take a united Westeros.
Yeah,
because it would be super easy for them to all, for Westeros to unite against something like that, or to unite against a wildling army. It's not like they have supplies and armor and. Yeah. I mean, they would have horses, I guess, and perhaps some other things they could ride from down south. But I just don't see how they could withstand. You know, a well-fortified, well-fed army that would unite in Westeros against them. So, yeah, it really is the other things that are beyond the wall that you have to worry about.
Which one? I guess the only thing, too, is that maybe the Night's Watch thinks, all right, if they get through, they're going to keep the gates open and let every dark thing in behind them, or who knows?
I don't think so. Know? Yeah, that might be what they think, but I would imagine it'd be the other way. I mean, the Mance Rayder is like, it seems to be, no, we want to get out ahead of everything else that's back here.
Right. I mean, like, yeah, from the Night's Watch perspective, like,
exactly.
Like, why would Corin say, but if the wall should ever fall? Well, I mean, we're chasing that. He's all this. And also, he's already talking about old powers rising and stuff like that. So, like, he can't think that. I mean, is the wall falling just that the wildlings take possession of it, and that means it's fallen? Or I think they'd be happy to walk through, and I think we see this later, right? Walk through and shut the gates behind them and say, good riddance, right? They're leaving their homes. Like they're going south. So, yeah.
And then they get to the part where John's saying, I'm not afraid to die. Corin says, you know, are you a man of the Night's Watch? He's like, there's no but. He commands him to kill him. Essentially, mm-hmm. basically is what ultimately ends up happening. And then you have to go back. You have to do this. He hopes so. I do not want to play the role of Oathbreaker, even for a good reason. John is thinking, right? And then we're going to sort of get attacked here by the men. So quickly now, the Half-Hand commanded the big man on the small horse rode over the ice like stones right into the curtain of water and vanished. When he did not reappear, John put his heels into his horse and went after. His Garen did his best to shy away. The falling water slapped at them with frozen fists, and the shock of the cold seemed to stop John's breath. Then he went through, drenched and shivering, but through. You know, we're getting sort of chased here. We're getting ready to, you know, over the rush of the falling waters, John heard a soft sound of steel on leather that could only mean the Half-Hand had drawn his sword. He took off his wet cloak, but it was too cold and damp in here to strip down any further. Ghost stretched out behind him and licked his club before curling up to sleep. We will be going into battle here.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately where we're going to end up going here. John does have some thoughts though. By the time we come out, we will have lost them, he told himself as they went. Not even an eagle can see through the solid stone. We will have lost them, and we will ride hard for the fist and tell the old bear all we know. But when they emerged back into the light, long hours later, the eagle was waiting for them, perched on a dead tree 100 feet up the slope. Ghost went bounding up the rocks after it, but the bird flapped its wings and took off into the air. Corin's mouth tightened as he followed its flight with his eyes. Here is as any good as place... as any to make a stand. The mouth of the cave shelters us from above, and they cannot get behind us without passing through the mountain. Is your sword sharp, Jon Snow? Yes, I'm again. Yes, we'll feed the horses. They've served. We'll feed the horses. They've served us bravely, poor beast. And then Jon's thinking to himself, I am the shield that guards the realms of men. Jon calls over Ghost. Then we hear, you know, the hunters approached warily, perhaps fearing arrows. Jon counted 14 with 8 dogs. So, I mean, they're obviously outnumbered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Real quick, just before you go on there, interesting point that I know people will point to with the whole Corrin thing. Corrin does say that, like, the place he takes them to, he said, not getting whether he's lying or not, that he heard how to get to this place, that someone followed a shadow cat clear back into this sort of waterfall, kind of like icy space.
Cave, yeah.
Yeah. And he heard that when he was no older than John's age. So, you know, if he's telling the truth there, it's sort of like, okay, he heard that from a brother. Now, is that a brother of the Night's Watch or a brother?
There we
go. Yeah, no, wordplay.
Right. So 10 yards below the cave mouth, the hunters halted. Their leader came on alone, riding a beast that seemed more goat than horse. From the sure-footed way it climbed the uneven slope, a man and mount grew near. Jon could hear him clattering. Both were armored in bones. Rattleshirt, Corrin called down, to crows, I be the Lord of Bones. The rider's helm was made from the broken skull of a giant, and all up and down his arms, bear claws had been sewn into his boiled leather. I see no lord, only a dog dressed in chicken bones who rattles when he rides, Corrin says to him. The wildling hissed in anger, and his mount reared. He did rattle. Jon could hear it. The bones were strung together loosely, so they clacked and clattered when he moved. It's your bones I'll be rattling soon, Halfhand. I'll boil the flesh off you and make a burnie from your ribs. I'll carve your teeth to cast me runes and eat me oaten porridge from your skull. If you want my bones, come get them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he doesn't want to go over there. And I think this is right after, this is where Jon kind of says, or he tells Jon to remember his oath, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jon kind of turns, says that he yields. He yields. He's a bastard. It's bastard blood.
Yeah. Yeah. So Rattleshirt bellowed over the clamor, right? You know, feather them, right? No, the word burst from John's lips before the bowman could lose. He took two quick steps forward. We yield. Yeah. He doesn't. The free folk have no need of cravens, right? He's no craven. One of the archers pulled. This is the bastard of Winterfell who spared me. Let him live. This is a Gret. Let him die, insisted the Lord of Bones. And then, yeah, they don't feather him with arrows. He should have fought it. You know, I mean, Rattleshirt should have fought Corrin.
He's a coward. He's a coward. So he does mention the line though, the black crow is a tricksy bird. I trust him not. So there's that whole crow being, right. Tricksy and, you know, all that good stuff. The three-eyed crow and it being tricksy. So it's really a Gret too that kind of mentions, like a lot of them step forward and say, okay, look, we're all free folk here. You're not really in charge. There is no person. They're all free. They don't bend the knee to anyone, right? Okay, they're free folk. So if Jon doesn't want to, you know, if he wants to join, he can join. If we say he can join, he can join. I mean, that's just the way it is. So,
yeah, you know, it's also interesting here just to sort of do some. To looking forward is that essentially their first meeting is Rattleshirt trying to kill Jon with an arrow. Mm-hmm. And then Rattleshirt's death will ultimately come from Jon with mm-hmm. an arrow.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. That's
so interesting. kind of interesting to look at that. So ultimately,
and mercy really. Yeah.
Yeah.
And giving mercy, like there's mercy given here. Like he prolongs Jon's life, even though it's that other people persuade him to do so, the Lord of Bones does allow Jon to live and go on with them. And then Jon,
right?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Does Jon really kill Rattleshirt out of mercy, or does he do it to sort of protect the secret of Mance being glamored.
No, I think it's I think he does it out of
a little. There's a little bit of mercy there.
Yeah, because again, he's killing. Who he kills is Mance, right? So,
He kills Mance and Rattleshirt are swapped.
Essentially, right, I mean, who's burning? The person who's burning.
Who's burning is Mance.
It's Mance.
It's Rattleshirt as Mance.
Right, as Mance. Who you see the body.
I got you. Like, yes.
Yeah, is Mance Raider. So I guess when we say, you know, I don't think at that point in time John knew. John was just trying to spare Mance that death or that pain. I think John finds out later. So that's interesting, yeah, but still, ultimately he does kill Rattleshirt with an arrow. Right? So,
yes, but I was just trying to let me go back and I need to look here. I just need to remember.
Like the sequence of events on
exactly. Does he know when he does? I thought he did.
I think he finds out, like, Melisandre reveals later that Mance is still alive to John.
Let me see here. Yes, you're correct. John is shocked to learn that Melisandre glamored Mance and Rattleshirt to appear as the other with the Lord of Bones, actually the panicked burn man in Melisandre's cage. Gotcha.
So that is...
That's a Dance of Dragons.
Because then John...
That's a Dance of Dragons, Melisandre 1.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess you're right. There is some mercy to it. I was trying to remember. I thought you're right. I was thinking it was the other way around, where he knew it and he was doing it so that other people didn't learn it. But no, you are correct. Yes.
Yeah, but still, there's the fact that he does kill him with an arrow is pretty interesting. That, like,
right,
he almost got killed here by a bunch of
wild arrow. Things.
Yeah, and then later on he does it. I mean, because it's so weird. It is such a I forget it sometimes because he fights the glamored Lord of Bones later.
Right. Yes. Yes, he does.
Right.
Yeah. But it's Mance Raider, and Mance Raider is like laying into him.
Yeah.
It's a legit.
So fight. Crazy.
So here is where Corrin and John fight. You know, and so this fight's definitely pretty interesting. You know, you must not balk whatever is asked of you, he's thinking. He shifted to a two-handed grip, quick enough to deliver a stroke of his own, but the bigger ranger brushed it aside with ease. Back and forth they went, black cloak swirling, and the youth's quickness against the savage strength of Corrin's left hand cuts. The half-hand's long sword seemed to be everywhere at once, raining down from side to side, and then the other, driving him where he would, keeping him off balance. Already he could feel his arms growing numb. Even when Ghost Teeth closed savagely around the ranger's calf, somehow Corrin kept his feet. But in that instance, as he twisted, the opening was there. John planted and pivoted. The ranger was leaning away, and for an instant it seemed John's slash had not touched him. Then a string of red tears appeared across the big man's throat, bright as a ruby necklace, and the blood gushed out of him, and Corrin half-hand fell.
Wow. Crazy. Yeah.
And then here we go. And then as Corrin is dying, his last words are sharp.
Yep. He asked him multiple times, is your sword sharp? He knew. He knew it was going to happen. He knew that he would have to, the moment that
I don't know if he knew he would be, if he would get his throat cut, but yes. If that's
no,
I think I think in the show he's just stabbed. If I remember correctly, I'll look that up.
I mean, the fact that Ghost is biting down on his leg and he still is able to keep his feet, he's obviously something else. The dire wolf's got you by the leg and you're still just going at it. Now, the wildlings will say too that it was more Ghost killed than it was John's, and yeah, they kind of try to take away from what he's done. I think somebody wants John gutted.
Yeah, and the show, the fight is definitely a little different. Corrin, I think it's pretty obvious that Corrin's like almost like, I mean, rewatching it here, it's almost like pretty obvious that Corrin's just like lets him win. Because I think John turns up. Ghost is not involved at all. Corrin, to me, almost looking at this, gives up his sword because he drops it. And then he sort of stares at John. And then John has to think about it and then stab him.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. They actually call John a warg too, right? Like multiple times. Mm-hmm. We know this, but they know it more so than, I mean, anyone else. Like it's very clear to them that he's a warg, which is cool. I mean, Lord of Bones still wants him dead, still wants him killed because he killed his own brother and so on. But, you know, Ygritte is able to kind of make a way for him.
Yeah. So then as we go on here, they sort of ask who he is. His name is Jon Snow. He's Eddard Stark's blood of Winterfell. Who would have thought it Corrin Hafe? And even that right there, I know that it's said that a lot, right? I know that it's said a lot, just that they don't say he's Eddard Stark's son. Like with Tywin and Tyrion, it's always, you're my son, you're my whatever. Now, it could just be the way that the Starks talk, and it could just be the way people in the North talk, but he's Eddard Stark's blood. So even here in a scenario where you could easily say son or even bastard, the name is blood.
It's a tie to blood. Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. Right. You don't have to do that.
You don't have to. You
choose
to.
Yeah.
Right.
So
it's just another like thing to sort of, you know, he's a warg to the Lord of Bones and a crow. I like him not. A warg he may be, Ygritte says, but that's never frightened us. Others shouted agreement behind the eye holes of his yellow skull. Rattle Shirt stared, was malignant, but he yielded grudgingly. These are free folk indeed, thought John. They burn Corrin Halfhand. They make a funeral pyre for him and burn him. So some of the wood was green and it burns slow and smoky, sending a black plume into the air of the bright, hard blue sky. Afterward, Rattleshirt claimed some charred bones, while the others threw dice for the ranger's gear. Ygritte won his cloak. Shall we return to the Skirling Pass? John asked her. No, she said, there's nothing behind us. By now, Mance is well down the Milkwater, marching on your wall.
Yep, marching on the wall. So, yeah, the fists, they're stuck out there at the Fist of the First Men. I mean, stuff's going to go down there. It just doesn't, even if they aren't attacked, they can't get back in time. It's just a complete cluster, man. Mormont wants to see what's going on. He goes out. And wow, they found something there. You know, the wildlings are moving. So much of those rangers patrolling and figuring out what the heck's happening.
Yeah, you know, I will say, even though we haven't met Mance Rayder yet, we will in the next chapter, which is John 1 of A Storm of Swords. That's where we meet him. But it's just kind of interesting to even think about Mance Rayder, right? Is we've yet to meet this guy. He's mentioned so often in the beginning of A Game of Thrones. And it's just been this buildup of Mance Rayder, Mance Rayder, Mance Rayder. Now it's like, oh no, we're going to go meet him.
Yeah.
And it's like, before the third book, before you meet this guy that they've been building up and building up. So Mance can't, to me, it's sort of, to me, you know, thinking about this just right now, of where we're at right now, like sort of looking at the flow of the text, to have Mance Rayder be dead in the pink letter as when we ultimately get to there without some sort of big sort of resolution just seems illogical to me.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. To build him up that much and to glamour him, to keep thinking like he's there from the beginning. He's on Eddard Stark's mind. He's on George's mind. We build up to this two books, as you say, and then we get there in the third book. We have a whole journey, a whole arc. He has a child. He works with John. They work together there at the wall. And then he's glamoured. He's saved again from Stannis. Why? Why Melisandre, flames, sees stuff? Who knows? He goes down now to Winterfell and is just killed.
Off screen.
Yeah. No, it's not happening.
I don't think so. Yeah. Don't think so. Awesome. Awesome. So, all right, guys. Well, that is it for us today. We'll be coming back with another episode. We have quite a bit of Ravens. So just going to kind of compile them into individual or separate episodes. Just depends on how the flow of that goes. But we do have a lot of them to get to. So we kind of wanted to give, and they're bigger, so we wanted to give them sort of their just due. So as crazy as this is about to sound, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 69, Bran 7, which is the final chapter of A Clash of Kings.
Yeah. Wow. It's awesome. Can't wait. All right, friends, with that, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write that review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.